Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods. Text 31. Swayam Samutirya Sudustaram Dhyuman Bhava Arnavam Bhimam Adabrasaurida Bhavat Pada Amboruha Navam Atra Te Nidaya Yata Sat Anugraha Bhavan Swayam Samutir Yasudustaram Dhyuman Bhavarnavam Bhimam Adabrasaurida Bhavat Padam Boruhanava Matrate Nidaya Yata Sadanugraho Bhavan Swayam Samutirya Sudustaram Dhyuman Bhavarnavam Bhimam Adabrasaurida Bhavat Padam Boruhanava Matrate Nidaya Yata Sadanugraho Bhavan Swayam, personally, Samutirya, perfectly crossing, Sudustaram, which is very difficult to cross, Dhyuman, O Lord, who appears exactly like the sun, illuminating the darkness of this world of ignorance. Bhava Arnavam, the ocean of nescience. Bhimam, which is extremely fierce. Adabrasaurida, devotees who are incessantly friendly to the fallen souls. Bhavat Pada Amboruha, your lotus feet. Navam, the boat for crossing. Atra, in this world. Te, They, the Vaishnavas. Nidaya, leaving behind. Yata, on to the ultimate destination. Vaikuntha. Such anugraha, who are always kind and merciful to the devotees. Bhavan, you. Translation. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore you are known as a desire tree. Vanchakalpaturu. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet, in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. Please repeat. O Lord, who resembled the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore you are known as a desire tree. Vanchakalpaturu. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet, in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and the merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home back to Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teachings to Rupa Goswami, said, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. Sisi Madhya 19.151. One can achieve the seed of Bhakti Lata, devotional service, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The duty of the Guru is to find the means, according to the time, the circumstances, and the candidate, by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from a candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. After wandering throughout the universe, a fortunate person within this material world seeks shelter of such a guru or acharya who trains the devotee in suitable ways to render service according to the circumstances, so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will accept the service. This makes it easier for the candidate to reach the ultimate destination. The Acharya's duty, therefore, is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Thus, it is the duty of the Acharya to publish books that will help future candidates to take up the method of service and become eligible to return home back to Godhead by the mercy of the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, this same path is being prescribed and followed. Thus, the devotees have been advised to refrain from four sinful activities: illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, and to chant 16 rounds a day. These are bona fide instructions, because in the Western countries, constant chanting is not possible. One should not artificially imitate Haridas Thakur, but should follow this method. Krishna will accept a devotee who strictly follows the regulative principles and the method prescribed in the various books and literatures published by the authorities. The Acharya gives the suitable method for crossing the ocean of nescience by accepting the boat of the Lord's lotus feet. And if this method is strictly followed, the followers will ultimately reach the destination by the grace of the Lord. This method is called Acharya Sampradaya. It is therefore said, Sampradaya Viniha Ye Mantraste Nishphala Mata, Padma Purana. The Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, one must accept the Acharya Sampradaya. Otherwise, one's endeavor will be futile. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore sings, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sane Vasa Janame Janame Hai E Abhilas. One must worship the lotus feet of the Acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over nescience will surely be successful. Translation again. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee, and therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vanchakalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet, in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. We are gathered here at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, Sri Sri Gaur Nithai, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram, and Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar, Lalita and Vishakha. In the most sacred days approaching the appearance day of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and of Srila Prabhupada, the pure devotee of Krishna and founder acharya of ISKCON. And the present verse, which was spoken by the demigods to Lord Krishna within the womb, describes the mercy of the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master, how they work together to deliver the fallen souls from the ocean of nescience and deliver them to the spiritual abode. And the two work together, the Lord and the devotee, in a very dynamic and personal reciprocation. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes the verse, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beej, that by the combined mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master, one gets the seed of devotional service. And as Lord Chaitanya describes, after receiving the seed of the Bhakti Lata Beej, one should plant it within one's heart and water it by the process of Shravanam Kirtanam, chanting and hearing about Krishna. At the same time, one should be careful of weeds that may grow up alongside the devotional creeper. The weeds, in broad categories, are the desires for sense gratification and mental speculation. And in particular, some weeds that are mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita are kutinati, diplomatic behavior, or fault-finding, pratistasha, the desire for position, the desire to be worshipped, jiva himsa, which is translated as violence towards other living entities. So there are different weeds that may grow up alongside the devotional creeper, and which may very much resemble the devotional creeper. And therefore, the devotee must be very careful to distinguish the weeds from the creeper. Otherwise, the water that is meant to nourish the creeper will be sucked up by the weeds, and the creeper itself will become weak, dry. So, take, for example, jiva himsa, violence to other living entities. Of course, on the gross platform, this refers to physical violence, to killing animals and eating their flesh. But Srila Prabhupada explains jiva means the living entity, or the life of the living entity, and the life of the living entity is bhakti, devotional service. There are many verses in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to the effect that if you're not engaged in devotional service, you are a dead person, although breathing. So devotional service is real life, the life of the living entity. And therefore, to deprive someone of the chance to engage in devotional service is violence to them. It's killing them. Another verse in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that says that if you see a person running forward blindly to a cliff, and that if he keeps running in the same direction, he'll fall off the edge of the cliff to his destruction, no sane or gentle person will allow him to do so. So people in general are rushing towards their destruction, following the path of sense gratification, suicidal path of sense gratification. And therefore, any genuine devotee or compassionate person will want to intervene by giving them proper instruction. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says that jiva himsa means to stop the preaching of Krishna consciousness. We're doing violence to people or letting people commit themselves to a violent end. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that this can take the form of doing business. One may think that by doing business, one can get money to spread Krishna consciousness, and certainly that is a bona fide activity. But it may happen that the preoccupation with business encourages one to forget the real purpose, which is to preach. And we get into a sort of vicious circle of earning money to spread Krishna consciousness, but we invest the money into earning more money to spread Krishna consciousness. And how much preaching are we actually doing? It's like a saying I heard when I was in high school. I guess it was supposed to be in an Italian accent, but it doesn't really have anything to do with Italians. But I dig the ditch to get the money, to have the strength to dig the ditch. That's it. It just goes in that circle, nothing more. Then kutinati, diplomatic behavior. And it's interesting that in the purports, or even in the synonyms sometimes, diplomatic behavior is connected with fault finding. But the basic idea is that I want to get ahead at the expense of others. I want to promote myself at the expense of others. So I'm very diplomatic. I present myself in a certain way to look good, and I may present others in a certain way to make them look bad. Or in other words, I find fault with them to make them look bad, so I look good in comparison. This is very common. Many devotees who work in the material world find it, and they're troubled. They don't know what to do. Because as devotees, we learn Srinadapi Sunichena Tararapi Sihishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. But then they feel, well, if I act like that, all these materialistic people around me in the workplace will just take advantage to get ahead, and I'll be left behind. And thus, I'll have less facility to serve Krishna. There's so many complications. And puja, labha, pratistha, wanting to be worshipped or adored, wanting to have some position, wanting to have some distinction. These are in the list of weeds. Now these weeds seem very gross. So why does Lord Chaitanya say that they may closely resemble the devotional creeper? The reason is that the same tendencies can exist within the effort to practice devotional service. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya says one must be very vigilant to identify these weeds and separate them from the devotional creeper. Just to give a very simple example, one devotee told me of a story. Very ordinary story, that it was a rule that the deity's Mahaprasad from the morning would be kept stored in a certain place and then distributed to all the devotees. So this other devotee who had some position in the temple was hungry. So he had access to the area where the Mahaprasad was stored, and he went in and took the Mahaprasad for himself and started eating it. Meanwhile, one of the devotees who was authorized to come there to actually take care of the Mahaprasad to distribute found him there. So he said, you know, I wanted to taste the Mahaprasad to make sure the quality was proper for the deities. That's a very simple, relatively innocent example of diplomatic behavior. That our motives are something, but our presentation of why we're doing what we're doing is different. And that can enter any sphere of devotional activity. And we ourselves may not even be clear about what our motives are. We may actually be under the impression that we're pure devotees and all this, you know, whatever it is we're doing, collecting money, collecting followers, collecting worship, is for Krishna. It's for Krishna. I'm just the medium. But within that process, we may be taking some of it for ourselves. Some percentage. We don't know what the percentage is, but we might be taking some percentage for ourselves. And we may not even be that conscious of it. But the effects of the weeds is that the water that's meant to nourish the creeper is sucked up by the weeds. That energy is sucked up by the weeds, and the creeper doesn't become strong. It becomes weak. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told the story of the wedding party. One of his disciples in his institution asked a question that all of your disciples are getting up for Mangal Arati, they're chanting their regular quota of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, they're reading the scriptures, they're doing service in the temple or for the temple, but some seem to be making great progress and others seem to be making hardly any progress at all. But they're all engaged in the same activities. What is the reason? And in reply, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati told the story that a wedding party had to attend a wedding down the river, across the river, and they boarded the boat at night, and they took rest, expecting that in the morning they would have reached their destination. But in the morning, they found that they were in the exact same place. They hadn't made any progress at all. So they began to accuse the boatman that instead of rowing the boat, you were just sleeping. He said, no, I wasn't sleeping. I was up the whole night rowing. I'm exhausted. Well, why haven't we gone anywhere? It was a big mystery. Eventually, someone found that the anchor was still in the ground, and that he had indeed been rowing all night, but the boat didn't go anywhere because the anchor was left in. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying that if we have material attachments, if we remain anchored to the material world in spite of the efforts that are meant to take us back to Godhead, we'll stay where we were. We won't actually progress. So we may not be so conscious of what the weeds are, but we can infer the presence of weeds, of material desires and attachments from our lack of advancement. So, Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas leave the method by which we can cross the ocean of nescience. The boat is surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. That's the boat. Samasritaye pada palavam plavam mahat padam punyaya so murare pavam budir vatsa padam param padam 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 yadvi padam natesham. That this material world is like a vast ocean. But for one who surrenders unto the lotus feet of Krishna, that vast ocean becomes just like a puddle of water created by the hoof print of a calf. Although there's danger at every step in the material world, the devotee crosses right over it. So that is the boat, the lotus feet of the Lord, surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. And there's a method to that surrender. It's not just a sentiment. Of course, the sentiment is good if it's genuine. Krishna, I am yours. I'm a fully surrendered soul unto you. Do with me what you like. But there's a process of surrender. That process is bhakti yoga. That process is given to us through the instructions of the acharyas, the revealed scriptures. But the acharyas adjust the basic principles that are given in the scriptures according to time, circumstance, and candidate. Even Vyasadeva, who compiled the Vedic scriptures, did the same thing. Originally, there was one Veda, and he divided the Vedic literature and to accommodate the people in Kali Yuga so that they could make spiritual advancement. So every acharya does that. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur did it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did it. And our Srila Prabhupada did it. He kept the same principles enunciated in the scriptures, but made adjustments according to the time, the circumstances, and the candidate. And Srila Prabhupada concluded that the basic instructions that he wanted every one of his followers to accept and follow are to chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra daily and to follow the four restrictive principles of no illicit sex, no taking of intoxicants, no gambling, no meat eating. And he says these are bona fide instructions. Now, some people may think, well, you know, historically, Gaudiya Vaishnavas chanted 64 rounds. And, well, Srila Prabhupada gave the instructions to us when we were new, but now we should do more. Of course, doing more is good, or can be good. But Srila Prabhupada says in this purport, in effect, that if you chant 16 rounds daily and follow the four regulative principles, which are bona fide instructions, you will board the boat that will carry you across the fierce ocean of nescience, and you will be successful in your journey back home. And why did Srila Prabhupada speak with such confidence, with such certainty? Because Krishna, who is very merciful to his empowered representative, who's very merciful to the acharya, accepts the method that the acharya leaves behind for the other devotees to follow. Srila Prabhupada gave us instructions that were meant to engage us in devotional service that Krishna would accept. And Krishna, out of his mercy or love for Srila Prabhupada, accepts the method, accepts the service that is rendered according to the instructions left by the acharya. In a way it's a very simple process, although in another way it's a mysterious process. And when I first joined, I heard that Srila Prabhupada gave an example of a representative of a business entering into an agreement or a contract with a customer. When the representative comes back to the main office, his boss or his authorities in the main office may not actually be happy about the agreement. But because he was their representative and he entered the agreement on behalf of the establishment, so the organization is obliged to honor the agreement. So it was a little puzzling for me then because, you know, I thought the spiritual master will only do what Krishna wants him to do. And certainly in principle that's true. But there may be, you know, now I've understood that everyone is an individual. Krishna is an individual. Our spiritual master is an individual. His spiritual master is an individual. His spiritual master is an individual. Nityananda Prabhu is an individual. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an individual. Krishna is an individual. Balaram is an individual. Radharani is an individual. They're all individuals. And they're the well-wishers of every living entity, but they're still individuals. Krishna wanted Subhadra to marry Arjuna. Balaram wanted her to marry someone else. They're individuals. So, Srila Prabhupada is Krishna's empowered representative, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. No doubt about it. He's also an individual. He's a devotee. And Krishna, out of compassion and love for his devotee, accepts the method that the devotee, Srila Prabhupada, has left behind for us to follow in his books and in his core instructions. And yesterday, devotees were pleased to hear a half-hour brief description of the passing of Nirguna Prabhu in Mayapur from Janmashtami Prabhu. How, through the process of dying, Nirguna Prabhu became completely purified, and in the end, he was eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. He's invited to come. And Janmashtami Prabhu made the point that this example of Nirguna Prabhu's life proves that Srila Prabhupada's promise to us that if we just chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulative principles, and dedicate our lives to spreading Krishna consciousness to our capacity, he will take us back home, back to Godhead. Now, of course, within those last 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 days, a lot of internal purification took place. But that was also arranged by the merciful Acharya and the merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that at the end he was deemed fit to return back home, back to Godhead. And many devotees who've had the experience of attending to dying patients have seen the same thing. Each case is unique, but there are examples, one after the other after the other, of devotees who, from a certain point of view, were not so extraordinary, not great world preachers like Sripad Gaurgovinda Swami Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Sridhar Swami, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami. They were devotees just like any of us sitting in the temple today, not famous as being great devotees throughout the world, but in their last years or months or days, they reached a very exalted level of consciousness that could be perceived clearly by anyone close to them. And therefore, each and every one of them is an example that substantiates Srila Prabhupada's promise to us, a promise that is fulfilled ultimately by the mercy of the Lord. This theme or principle of the Lord upholding the promise of the devotee appears in Krishna Lila, in Chaitanya Lila. The example from Krishna Lila, which is quoted by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to Gadadhar Pandit in Gaur Lila, is that Krishna had taken a vow, made a commitment before the battle of Kurukshetra, that according, anyway, we don't have so much time, but that he would not take up weapons and fight in the battle. That whichever side he was on, he would not take up weapons or fight. And that the other side would get his army. So during the battle, Duryodhana accused Bhishma Dev, general on the side of the Kauravas, of not fighting to his full capacity out of his affection for the Pandavas, which in terms of Kshatriya chivalry, it was an insult, it was a challenge. And Bhishma Dev accepted the challenge and said, all right, I will fight so fiercely in the battle tomorrow that either I will kill Arjuna or force Krishna to break his promise not to enter the fighting. And it just so happened like that, that Arjuna was in great difficulty. He was on the verge of being killed by Bhishma Dev. And Krishna picked up a broken chariot wheel as a weapon and rushed towards Bhishma Dev as if to kill him. Krishna did not want the word of his devotee, the commitment or promise of his devotee, to be broken. And therefore, he was willing to break his own word to uphold the word of Bhishma Dev. So Krishna does that. So in that vein, we can say Srila Prabhupada gave his word to us. It's here in the purport. And Krishna will uphold his word. And that's what the verse says, that Krishna accepts the method that the acharyas leave behind to help the other devotees out of mercy upon the acharya and also out of compassion for the other devotees who are behind trying to follow the method. It's so simple and clear. But we have to do it. It's so simple, but we have to do it. And how many of us really chant 16 rounds and follow the four principles? I'm sure here in this audience, many do. But if we take the total number of devotees who have been initiated by Srila Prabhupada or by his disciples, how many do and how many don't? I don't have the statistics. But as Srila Prabhupada said, chanting Hare Krishna is easy, but the determination to chant Hare Krishna is not so easy. We need that determination. And Srila Prabhupada has given the definition on many occasions of determination as meaning, I'm determined that I shall go back home, back to Godhead in this very life. That's what it means to be determined. So we should have that determination and engage in our service with that intensity. Now, you know, what to say. We're so much affected by the departure of Vayendra Prabhu. But he was an example of that intensity, the intensity that's required. It doesn't matter who you are, what your background is, what your nature is, what your history is, what your ethnic community is. What matters is the intensity with which you apply yourself to devotional service. The second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam says, Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha param. That akama, if you have no desires, sarvakama are full of desires, or mokshakama are desirous of liberation. Tivrena bhakti yogena, if you engage in the process of bhakti yoga with great intensity, tivrena, like the intensity of the sun, the hot sun, you will reach the supreme destination. So that's what we need. We need that intensity. And we get that intensity, we get that determination by associating with devotees who have it. That's why Ayendra Prabhu, as an example, was able to reclaim so many devotees, because he personally had that intensity. So even if they just happen to wander in to the 24-hour kirtan, sort of just sitting there on the periphery, his intensity was so powerful that they could feel it. And they were drawn in. Of course, not everyone is drawn in. I heard from Gopal Prabhu, and I'm not sure if he was quoting Ayendra Prabhu or exactly, but Tivrena, the intensity of the sun, it can be very warming and comforting and energizing if you're sort of cold and weary. But it can also burn. So it sort of depends on the candidate, the capacity of the recipient to accept that intensity. But there are different types of intensity. And I'm just quoting this. I don't even know if it's true or what. But during the last year, I stayed with a disciple of Tamal Krishna Goswami. He was a brahmachari for many years, but now he's married. But he had served Tamal Krishna Goswami personally. And he said that, I'm just repeating, but he said that serving you is like serving Tamal Krishna Goswami because of the intensity. The difference is that he was intense vocally and you're intense silently. But the same intensity is there. So, maybe not such a good example because I had to include myself in it, but the idea is some people may be more receptive to a certain type of intensity than to another type of intensity. But without that intense dedication to the order of the spiritual master and the process of bhakti yoga as it has been passed on to us by the previous acharyas, you'll remain in this sort of twilight zone. You're engaging in devotional service, but you have your material attachments and desires, and you're chanting, but you're thinking about other things, maybe even doing other things, like driving while you're chanting. You're reading, but you don't really know if you believe everything you read in the books. And you're doing it, but you don't really have the required faith to accept the process with the required intensity. And the very beginning, ado shraddha, the very beginning is shraddha, which is defined as the firm conviction that simply by engaging in devotional service, all other ends will be achieved. If you have that conviction, you can engage in uttama bhakti, because you're not thinking, oh, I need to add a little, you know, fruitive activity here, a little karma, or need a little, of course we wouldn't call it mental speculation, but it would come to, you know, add a little speculation here to make adjustments. We don't have the required faith that if we just follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, which are the embodiment of the instructions of the previous acharyas and the scriptures, adjusted for us in Kali Yuga now, we will dilute our execution of devotional service with different other processes. Like when Srila Prabhupada arrived in Boston, not when he first arrived, from India, but he was walking along. He was on the way from to the temple, Boston Temple, and he saw a sign on the wall of a building: unalloyed steel, and mighty cane, unalloyed steel. We are preaching unalloyed devotional service. Unalloyed steel means pure steel. It's not mixed with any inferior metal that could weaken it. So unalloyed devotional service is not mixed with any other process, karma, jnana, yoga, and so on, that would make it weaker. And every other process is weaker than bhakti, and any other process added to bhakti makes a weaker alloy, dilutes it, makes it less intense. So, all right, Krishna consciousness is a gradual process. Someone might not be able to take the full dose of the medicine, so we dilute it, and that's all well and good. But as Ayendra Prabhu says, how long is this gradual process going to be gradually? When are we finally going to become serious? When are we finally going to take up the process wholeheartedly? So, what can I say? I'm sitting before such exalted devotees who are blessed and privileged, some of them, to live in Vrindavan, some of them to spend 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, 2 weeks. I couldn't even make it up to 1 week. And in that week, of course, I'm not saying it's a curse, in a way it's a blessing, but in that whatever days I had, the extent of my parikramas was between where I was staying in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in this direction and the Bhaktivedanta Hospice in that direction. So I'm certainly no one to be sitting before all of you blessed souls and instructing you. And I'm not instructing, I'm just repeating and trying to make more clear what Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada in his purport have said. But I do have that faith that if we do wholeheartedly accept the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the merciful acharyas in the Sampradaya that have come to us through Srila Prabhupada, adjusted by Srila Prabhupada in terms of time, circumstance, and candidate, that if we do follow that, the merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead will accept the service rendered according to Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And by the combined mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, we can go back home, back to Godhead in this very lifetime, and give others the same method by which Srila Prabhupada crossed, the same method by which we're crossing, and the method by which they also can cross. And as Srila Prabhupada said, we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual sky. And as Burijan Prabhu said, in his sort of wry, humorous way, that the idea of another ISKCON in the spiritual sky, he wasn't so sure what he thought about the idea, how much he liked the idea. But then he said, now that Tamal Krishna Goswami, that's, you know, the context, now that Tamal Krishna Goswami has gone there, suddenly the idea has become a lot more attractive. And as one after the other go, I'm sure we'll find that the idea is becoming more and more attractive. And so many of our dear loved ones will be there, pulling us there. We'll also let go of some of our attachments and, okay, take me. I want to be with you guys. I don't want to be left behind here. And we'll all go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. So,
questions?
So we'll take questions. I've heard that prasad is usually served around 10, so, but still, if you have other service, don't feel obliged to stay. We'll understand that you're not going to do anything mixed that will mix your devotional service. We'll take it you're going to do something that out of the intensity of your desire to serve Guru and Krishna. So if you need to leave, please leave. We won't pass any judgment on you. Yes, sir.
Does it mean that he has to be like a little, you know, harsh to other devotees or tough on other devotees or tough on those who are under him or her? So intensity means really that to ourselves or to others?
According to our service, we may be whatever we may have to appear to be for the sake of our service. Srila Prabhupada was intense. I mean, all of our acharyas, preachers, were intense. And sometimes it was very hard to take the intensity. I'll give one example. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned about the management of Hare Krishna land in Juhu. So once when he arrived in Bombay, I went to the airport to receive him, and I was riding in the same car with him, and I was thinking, wow, you know, get to ride in the same car with Srila Prabhupada, how blissful. So as soon as we got to Hare Krishna land, Srila Prabhupada started pointing out the faults. Why is that light left on? What is that person doing there? He saw signs of urine, of the dogs passing urine on the wall. And then a little later, I mean, you wouldn't believe that. It was probably a 2 or 3 minute drive from the gate, from the entrance of Hare Krishna land to Srila Prabhupada's quarters. But that 3 minutes felt like an interminable eternity. It's like the very first, why is that light on? I mean, I was already stunned, like, then why this, why that? Then he saw someone carrying away a dry palm leaf. Why is he doing that? You cannot allow people to take the dry. And then, you know, later I said, why? It's dry. It's fallen down. It could fall on someone. Then he said, because in the guise of taking away the dry ones, they'll take away the green ones. And then, you know, being as I asked, well, so? And he said, well, it will destroy the beauty of the tree. But anyway, so then, that was just the beginning. Then we climbed up the stairs to Prabhupada's quarters, and I thought, okay, now it'll be so blissful. We're going to wash Prabhupada's feet, and he'll just glance at everyone lovingly and exchange sweet words. And then he started criticizing my management or lack of management in front of all the devotees. And then I was thinking, you know, how are they going to follow me if Prabhupada criticizes me in front of them? But, you know, in the end, I had faith. You know, whatever Prabhupada does, you know, he's being inspired by Krishna. It's for the best, and I just accepted it. But it was intense, and it was difficult. And when Srila Prabhupada went to Rishikesh just shortly before coming to Vrindavan, towards the end, he gave the example of blowing on a boil. That someone comes with a boil, suffering from a boil, so you want to make him to feel better, so you blow on it. Well, how much good does that do? You have to cut it out. And the process of cutting it out may be painful, but you accept the surgical operation to become free from that boil. So, yeah, it may be that someone is at a stage of devotional service or spiritual health where they're not ready to be cut. So, okay, we just blow, flatter them, encourage them, and that will also help, because as long as they keep serving, eventually they'll come to the stage where they're ready for more incisive measures. But the word sadhu means to cut. Sadhus cut. They cut our attachments. And having our attachments cut can be painful. Therefore, people can turn against a sadhu. Even though a sadhu, Sadhu Bhushanam, Ajata Shatra, sadhu has no enemies. But because the sadhu cuts and people don't want their false egos to be cut or their material, grosser material attachments to be cut, so they may react. They may turn against the sadhu. That being said, we could be in a situation where a devotee who's still more or less on the material platform is engaging us, training us, correcting us. And from the very beginning, their motives may be mixed. They may say, you know, I want you to do this in the guise that they want you to do it for service, but actually, to some degree, they may want you to do it for their own sense gratification. And if you don't do it the way they want, they may get angry. And ostensibly, they're angry because you're not serving Krishna properly. But they're actually angry because their sense gratification is being frustrated because you're not giving them what they want. So, if that were the case, this is very hypothetical, but you could approach the authority's authority and say that this is going on. This is the authority's very passionate. I mean, he does wonderful service, and whatever he does, you know, give credit where credit is due. But this person is very passionate and very heavy on the people under him, and they can't take it. And if it goes on like this, they'll leave. So I think it's better you do something. Either help the authority to maybe modify his or her behavior, or maybe bring in someone else who's a little milder and a little more congenial, maybe even in between that person and the others. There's different ways of approaching it. There could be a genuine problem. There could be a genuine problem. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if someone leaves, we should take 50% of the responsibility. It's very easy. Oh, they left. It means they weren't sincere from the beginning. I knew they weren't sincere. That's why they left. No, we should take responsibility. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said half. Depending on the situation, we could feel even more responsible. That if I was more vigilant, if I was more caring, if I was more loving, if I was more intelligent, things wouldn't have come to the stage where the person left. So I believe that individually we should feel responsible. But sometimes being mild is a sort of abdication of one's responsibility. Oh, it's just easier, let it go. It's easier than taking the trouble to correct the disciple or the subordinate. And here I think of one story that His Holiness Navayogendra Swami told when Srila Prabhupada was in his last days in Juhu, just before he came here for his final journey. Srila Prabhupada was very particular about the prasad being served in time and being prepared in a certain way. And Navayogendra Swami, you know, was engaged in some personal service in Srila Prabhupada's quarters in Juhu in the last months. And Prabhupada would ring the buzzer, you know, and he would come in. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would be very angry. So once Navayogendra Swami said to Srila Prabhupada that sometimes when we come in and we're so angry, when you're so angry like that, we don't know what to think, we don't know what to feel. And Srila Prabhupada said, you should feel very jubilant. There are so many people loitering on the street with no one to look after them. But you should feel jubilant that you have your master who's looking after you and caring for you. And if you do something wrong, he's correcting you. But you should feel jubilant. Praharsha yisyami sanatha jivita. All right, I guess last or last to last. Yes, this...
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much for your merciful. Maharaj, actually in starting in devotional service, the sentence was very simple that follow four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds. It was very simple. So I started up the devotional service. Oh, it is very nice. I will definitely back to Godhead as Prabhupada told. After starting the devotional service, as the days are going on, sometimes some of the seniors tell that attentive chanting is important. Some other days, now you, as you told that intensity is important. Sometimes someone tell that surrender is important. Means as the day is going on, one or the other word I am hearing, means that is important, this is important, be careful about the Vaishnava Paradas. Like that, every day, one or the other point I am getting into my knowledge, that you have to take care of this. So at what is the final statement that you give the assurance that, no, now you can back to Godhead?
The final assurance is your desire, the sincerity of your purpose. It's not what you do externally, but it's what you desire. Where do you want to go after you leave your body? In your heart of hearts, do you want to come back and enjoy? Do you still have remnants of desires that you want to fulfill? Or do you really want to go to Krishna and serve him? So it really depends on your sincerity of purpose. But if you're sincere, now this is very interesting. What is sincerity? How do you know if you're sincere? And once after Srila Prabhupada gave a talk about sincerity, a disciple asked him, And Srila Prabhupada replied that, you know, if you're sincere, you'll follow all of the instructions of the spiritual master, however big or small. But even there, there's always considerations. Like when I was a new devotee, you know, we had like sacred throw out and ordinary throw out. So sacred things would go in the sacred throw out, and it would be disposed with in a way appropriate for sacred articles, and the ordinary things would be thrown in the regular trash. As new, maybe a few weeks in the temple, and I saw that in those days, those were before computers, so we got letters in the mail in envelopes. You open up the envelope, you take out the letter and read it, and you discard the envelope. Or as Prabhupada did, he kept the envelopes and used it as scrap paper. So I saw that Satsvarupa, who I adored, was throwing envelopes in the ordinary trash that had as the address International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Was the holy name of Krishna. It was supposed to go in the sacred throwout. So I asked him, quite innocently, and he said, you know, I could do that, but I would end up spending so much time separating the envelopes that belong in the sacred throwout from the envelopes that go in the regular throwout, I wouldn't have any time to spread Krishna consciousness. So sometimes it may happen that two instructions are in conflict. Could be apparent conflict, but it could be that they're actually in conflict with each other. And then we have to know which instruction under the circumstances is more important. And quite often, what's really important is, depending on the context, spreading the movement or taking care of the devotees. And ultimately, it comes to the same thing. Spreading the movement means caring for people, bringing them in, and then when they're in, caring for them until the end, till they go back to Godhead. And here I think of one example from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, very instructive and relevant. Every year, the devotees from Bengal would travel basically by foot to Jagannath Puri to attend the Rath Yatra and have association with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Shivananda Sen took up the service of making all the arrangements for the devotees to go to Jagannath Puri. And he was expert. He was expert. On the way, they came to a town, and because Nityananda Prabhu had to stay back to negotiate paying the toll for having crossed the river, he was not with the party when they came to the village. And when they came to the village, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, was not happy with the arrangements. In fact, he was very upset. And when Shivananda Sen reached, Nityananda Prabhu chastised him and kicked him. Hare Krishna. Shivananda Sen thought, now my life is perfect. I have been kicked by the lotus foot of Nityananda Prabhu. Now my spiritual life is successful. But Nityananda Prabhu had a nephew, a young boy, who couldn't appreciate the transcendental pastime of Nityananda Prabhu kicking his uncle Shivananda Sen. He thought that Nityananda Prabhu was being disrespectful to his uncle. So he was very upset and he left the party. They were already fairly close to Jagannath Puri. He left the party to go ahead to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to complain to him about Nityananda Prabhu's rough behavior. So the boy, he was very upset, and on top of it, walking over land, Chaturmasya, it's hot, it's humid. So then he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's residence and he wanted to see him. So Mahaprabhu's servant, Govinda, told him that actually, you know, you're not properly dressed for seeing the Lord. So you're seeing the Lord, it's like going for deity worship. You know, you should be clean, you shouldn't wear stitched cloth, so many. And Mahaprabhu, from inside, overheard Govinda instructing the boy. And he said, don't instruct him like that. He's in a disturbed state of mind. Let him. So, if someone is in a disturbed state of mind, helping him in his disturbed state of mind is a higher priority than trying to enforce some relatively unimportant technical detail of devotional service on the person. It happens all the time that we have to choose between two principles that are in conflict with each other in a particular situation. And once I asked Srila Prabhupada the exact same question. How do you know when to make an adjustment? And Srila Prabhupada replied with another story from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes with Govinda. That it was the procedure after Mahaprabhu had his midday meal that he would lie down and Govinda would massage his feet. So one day after his meal, it just so happened that Mahaprabhu laid down at the entranceway to the room. And there was no way for Govinda to do his service of massaging Mahaprabhu's lotus feet except by stepping over the body of Mahaprabhu to enter the room, which he did. And he did his service, and after some time Mahaprabhu awoke and he said, oh Govinda, what are you doing here? Well, I came to massage your feet, as is my practice. He said, but it's so late now, have you taken prasad? No, I haven't taken prasad. How could I take prasad? To get out of the room, I would have to step over your body. And Mahaprabhu said, but how did you get in the room? He said, well, I stepped over your body. Then, the answer was that for the sake of his service, Govinda violated the principle of not stepping over the body of a devotee, the body of a sannyasi, the body of the Lord. But for the sake, in Govinda's mind, but for the sake of his own son's gratification, he would not violate the principle. So from this story, Srila Prabhupada gave me the instruction that for the sake of devotional service, you can violate a lesser principle for the sake of a greater principle. But you should not violate any principle, big or small, for the sake of your sense gratification. Well, I've already gone 5 minutes over. Now who's our temple president is not here. Do we have a vice president? Oh, here, there he is. What do we do? There's one more hand up. Answer it. Okay. Siddhi Lala Dasi.
Guruji, the holy name is purifying. So how is it that it sucks up the water that's meant for the creeper? That is, how is it that it nourishes the weeds?
You're saying the holy name?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good question. Watering, you know, the process of watering the seed of devotional service is chanting and hearing, Shravanam Kirtanam. So how could we be engaged in chanting the holy name and the result be that we develop weeds, which means material desires, and be deprived of the water meant for the creeper? Because everything depends on our intention. And I may not be telling it exactly right, but one of Ayendra Prabhu's most ardent students and servants is Bhakta Varun Gogna from London. And Varun told me that he had a dream. At one stage he felt he wasn't developing his relationship with Srila Prabhupada enough, and that he should try to develop his relationship with Srila Prabhupada more, even though Ayendra Prabhu was clearly his Shiksha Guru. And so he began to listen to Prabhupada's lectures a lot and read Prabhupada's books. And when he was beginning that process, Prabhupada appeared to him in a dream. And in the dream, Varun was in the 24-hour kirtan along with other devotees. And Prabhupada came nearby and said, "I like the kirtan that you're doing. But if you perform for the sake of attracting women, you will go to hell." And Varun took it as a serious instruction. And I think that was Ayendra Prabhu's mood. That, yeah, you may come with your conditioning to the kirtan, but once you're in the kirtan, if you really want to enter the kirtan, You're there for the sake of the kirtan, for the sake of pleasing Krishna, not for your name and fame or anything else. So, still, the Lord is merciful. He'll try to take the good that he's chanting my name. But part of his mercy is he fulfills the desires of the living entities. And if the living entity wants to use the holy name for some sort of material improvement, the Lord may grant the person the material improvement, but deprive him of the nectar of the holy name. But because the Lord is merciful, after allowing the devotee to enjoy the material world, he may create a situation that will show the devotee that he can't enjoy the material world. It may even come in the form of some calamity, yasyaham anugrinami parishyeta dinamshanai. It may come in the form of a terminal illness. And then the devotee will think, I became distracted, I became deviated. Now I'm going to be leaving my body, I'm going to be facing the consequences for all of my activities, and I'm going to reach a destination according to my consciousness at the time of death, better late than never. And that intensity may come under those severe circumstances. So, temporarily, yeah, you may go to hell. If that's what you want from the holy name, if that's what you want from the association of devotees, for some time you may go to hell, which may mean develop a hellish mentality. Naraki, you know, thinking of Vaishnavas belonging to a certain caste or community, thinking of the spiritual master as an ordinary person, thinking of the deity as a stone idol, that's a hellish mentality, or as Prabhupada sometimes said, you become a resident of hell. So if that's your motivation, you may go to hell. You might be in the same body, you might even be in the temple, but you'll have a hellish mentality. But then the Lord, out of his mercy, may create a situation where you realize that you've deviated and come back, you know, slowly crawl back to your original position. So ultimately, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankhya, ultimately, as long as one perseveres, even if he has ulterior motives, ultimately, Krishna's mercy will prevail and he'll be successful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.